Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Even before we started constantly washing our hands during this pandemic, most of us followed the old adage, cleanliness is next to godliness. But today, we're going to talk to a skeptic, a medical doctor who hasn't taken a shower in 5 years. Well, let's say he hasn't used soap in the shower for 5 years. He certainly washes his hands, but he says the soap industry created the myth that showering every day is necessary to be clean. And he argues they sold us on the idea of one soap for our body, another for our hair, another for our face, plus moisturizers and conditioners. And that is why last year the soap industry brought in nearly $100 billion. Now, before you get yourself into a lather, let's spend the hour getting our guest to clean up some of our misconceptions about our obsession with being clean. Dr. James Hamblin is a board-certified preventive medicine physician and lecturer at the Yale School of Public Health. He's also the author of the book Clean, a New York Times editor's pick, and one of NPR's best books of the year. And as a staff writer at The Atlantic, he wrote the article, I Quit Showering and Life Continued, the subtitle of which is, we spend two full years of our lives washing ourselves. How much of that time and money and water is a waste? Something to put in the back of your mind as we have this conversation. Dr. Hamblin, thank you for joining us. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
No, you're very welcome. I'm glad you're here. You are, as I said, a preventive medicine specialist, and right now we're in the midst of this pandemic where we are being told to constantly wash our hands for at least 20 seconds with soap and water. You're on board with that, right?
You will not find a bigger advocate of that than I am. It was, an odd time to have the book coming out this year during a pandemic because I've been working on it for years. And I really was very hopeful that no one would get that mixed message that I was at all challenging hand washing. So I'm definitely not. It's extremely important.
And that's why I wanted to put it up front. You even talk about, I think you told one reporter that you're a little concerned that because we no longer shake hands, that we are upsetting the balance or the exchange, if I'm getting this right, of the microbiomes that we each carry around on our skin.
That's a completely hypothetical takeaway. I think we are going to see effects of the changes in our lifestyle and behavior that we've seen from the isolation over the course of this year. And one of the things that we know will decrease is just sort of the amount of exposure to other people's microbes generally. I mean, the whole point of the isolation and the measures we're taking is to decrease the transmission of one particular virus. But, every time you interact with someone in close contact, you're exchanging some sorts of microbes, some bacteria, viruses, most of which are not causing disease at all. And that's built into our normal functioning. We carry around microbes and we exchange them with people, and partly there's a baseline that is sort of our innate fingerprint, but we're also carrying around signs of who and what we were just exposed to. And for this period of isolation, we are just not doing that. And so any attempt to talk about what the effects will be longer term are speculative, and I don't mean to question at all that we want to take every measure to prevent the spread of this dangerous virus, but there could be subtle effects, like from not shaking hands.
Well, what about when we go back to shaking hands? Hopefully someday we'll be able to do that. I mean, and we'll be in close contact once again with a lot of people not in our pod. Do you anticipate any kind of medical outbreak of something that we would normally have been immune to, but now because we've been away from each other for so long, maybe not so much anymore?
Well, I don't think our immune systems are going to change substantively just from this period of withdrawal. The sort of one of the arguments in the book, though, is that our immune systems have changed over the course of generations of having less and less exposure to to the natural world, to living indoors, to being constantly clean, to being exposed to fewer microbes. In many ways, that was great. You know, we don't die of the preventable infectious diseases that we used to, but we also have a lot more allergies and autoimmune diseases that we didn't used to plague humans.
So let's get into the topic of your book, Clean, The New Science of Skin. As you said, written prior to the pandemic, but the very first sentence reads, 5 years ago, I stopped showering. Clearly, that's unusual. And we'll talk about the effects of that, but you believe in hand washing, and you believe in hand washing frequently, particularly because of this pandemic, and you are a doctor, so I'm sure before you would interact with a patient, you would wash your hands. What's the difference between using soap and water to wash your hands and hopping in the shower and lathering up?
I might compare it to, you know, what's the difference between putting hand sanitizer on your hands or and putting it all over your entire body? You know, that sounds ridiculous to us because it's marketed to us as just hand sanitizer. Right. But effectively, you might think that the theory should apply everywhere. And, you know, soap is like a hammer. It's a tool. It's a very valuable tool. It can remove grease and grime from us in places where we really need it to. We can help take this layer of microbes off of our hands when we need it to, but that doesn't mean that it is, you know, a hammer is not the right tool for all kinds of different jobs. If you're fixing a window or a keyboard, you know, that's not what you want. So I would, you know, the challenge is to avoid this binary where we think, oh, soap a little bit is good. That means it's good everywhere and more is better and going without it is bad, to thinking, you know, this is a really valuable, really important thing in some circumstances, in some parts of the body and in certainly in some scenarios becomes more important than others. Well, but that doesn't mean it's good all the time.
And we certainly have gotten carried away. I remember when I was a kid, back in the Pleistocene age, we had a bar of soap in the shower and a bottle of shampoo. And now people have various different soaps and body washes and shampoos and conditioners. And your wife may have a completely different set of supplies than you do. And it's the whole shower installation is crowded with product. We've gone over the deep end, and we've done that because we're told we should do that. They're called soap operas for a reason, because the soap industry came along and sponsored them, and they didn't do it out of the goodness of their heart. They sold product and ideas, not just the product, but the idea that we need these things. So how did you overcome that? What possessed you 5 years ago to say, I'm not doing this anymore?
I think that, like a lot of people, I had this sense, this sort of unquestioned belief in my head that showering daily, like, you know, lathering up, washing your hair, washing your whole body, was somehow healthy or medically important. You know, it was imbued with something that was not just a preference, not just something I do to because I enjoy it, but something that I actually needed to do. And I started to wonder where that belief came from. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I'd been reading a lot of papers in scientific journals that were about the microbes on our skin. And people were starting to talk about products that would help you optimize the microbes on your skin that are normal, in the same way that we think about gut microbes. You know, skin microbes are something that people now, some scientists would like to try to help people have a healthy skin microbiome. So that added to that sense, what am I doing? Do I need to be washing all these microbes off? Is that good? Is it potentially even counterproductive? I started to experiment with doing less, and I didn't quit cold turkey, but gradually went down to doing almost nothing. And then, for purposes of just proving to myself that I could, went for a while doing absolutely nothing, and then have just since gone back to just using water alone occasionally.
Well, you know, I'm wondering if the world is designed in a certain way. We all have microbes on our skin. We have microbes in our gut. And when you disturb the microbes in your gut, you can have gastrointestinal issues. I mean, you cannot feel good. So if we are disturbing the microbes on our skin, can that be good for us? I mean, we want to be clean. We don't want grease and grime on ourselves. But I think somebody points out in one of your books or articles that, yeah, you want clean hands, but there's no reason to really wash your forearm unless you get it greasy or something. There's no reason to put soap on that part of your body because we're disturbing the microbe flora and fauna that live on us. What's the consequence of that?
You know, it's probably pretty benign. Now, some people definitely do overwash. They're taking long, hot showers. They're using aggressive soaps. Very often, they are experiencing dry skin, acne, eczema, and it's very likely that those people would actually see a tangible benefit from doing less. For other people, it's more likely that you're just washing off some oils that take some time to come back, and you've just wasted a bit of time and money and water and done something that was unnecessary and created some extra plastic bottles that will end up in the oceans and had to be transported around the world. But I digress. So it's in most cases probably just benign nothing that you'll be fine for having done, but that was certainly not beneficial.
Well, when we come back from the break, I want to talk to you about how other people reacted to you once you, even if you didn't tell them, you're no longer using soap in the shower. I'm just curious what their impressions of you were. Dr. James Hamblin's our guest. He's a preventive medicine physician and the author of Clean, the New Science of Skin. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Dr. James Hamblin is our guest. He is a preventive medicine physician and lecturer at the Yale School of Public Health. But more importantly, for the purposes of this discussion, he is the author of Clean, the New Science of Skin, and a staff writer at The Atlantic, in which he wrote an article called I Quit Showering and Life Continued. But how did it continue, Dr. Hamblin, for those around you? I mean, you stopped using soap in the shower, and you stopped using deodorant and many other products that we inundate ourselves with.
Yeah. Well, I tried to always be respectful about it, and I wean myself off of it. You know, I liken it to sort of training for a marathon, and especially during the time when I was getting off of deodorant, I always had some with me in case there was an emergency scenario. And I had friends and even some colleagues who knew what I was doing, you know, from a journalistic scientific perspective, who I could ask to objectively tell me if, you know, I smelled bad, because I was not going to be offended. I just wanted to know, just wanted to keep track of things and make sure I wasn't offensive to other people. And yeah, you know, it turns out that is a big driver of why we do a lot of what we do in terms of personal care is out of respect.
Well, you know, I like to watch these period dramas in movies and television, mm-hmm. and you know, you see them walking down the street, and the women are in these long to the heel of their shoe dresses, and they're scraping along in the mud of the street, and you know the street is full of horse manure and the world smells bad. And I'm thinking, these people must smell bad because they don't have showers. They don't bathe. There are no real perfumed soap products. The world must have been terrible. But I guess maybe we didn't notice because we all smelled that way.
I think that's a fascinating point, that we used to be more accustomed to people having odors, to people having scents. Now, even in those period dramas, there is still someone who has a very particularly foul smell. You know, it's not throughout history books and in literature, you know, there are people who are noted for being offensive smelling.
Yeah.
But it's notably not everyone, you know? So I think what changed was, right now, there is a basic idea that if you can smell someone, if you can detect an odor from someone that is not lilac or cool ocean breeze, you know, an actual odor of a human, that we think that is offensive or a sign of lack of hygiene.
Well, that leads me to my question. I mean, if everybody smelled bad and the world smelled different than it does today, back then in the 1800s and the 1700s and before, we live in a different world where we don't smell those things anymore. And we all, as you say, smell like lilac, or we smell like citrus, or whatever cologne we might apply to ourselves after we use all the other products that make us smell good. Is it acceptable in this world to have a perceptible odor?
Yeah, I think in many circles, no. We have kind of removed that sense from the panoply of ways in which humans communicate and experience one another, except for probably, you know, close family, intimate partners. So our threshold for what we consider to be offensive is just very different than it used to be. And, I think that comes back to drawing on marketing, where we were taught that if any detectable smell is coming from you, that means you have body odor, that means you have a problem, that means you are unhygienic and morally deficient. And I think that's something that's definitely worth challenging.
Well, your girlfriend, you write, and I think she's your wife now, but your girlfriend says that you now smell like a person. What does a person smell like, since we've never smelled one before?
You know, we all have uniqueness in our microbial ecosystem. So there are trillions of microbes on my skin, on yours, all the time. Mm-hmm. And they metabolize the oils that come out of our skin normally. And through that process, give off some byproducts that are partly due to, you know, what we've eaten, how much we've slept, how stressed out we are in terms of what's coming out of our pores, and then what microbes are on our skin. And then that can lead to most of these chemicals that we put off into the air are not detectable. We can't smell them, but scientists can detect when they're accumulating in a room. But some of them in aggregate will produce odors, only one of which is this sort of oniony BO smell, which I guess is pretty roundly universally disgusting to people. But there's actually a much, much wider range of chemical signals that come off of us that are, you know, completely fine.
So I'm taking it that although you had friends and colleagues and professionals around you who knew what you were about and were willing to tell you if you were becoming offensive, that really didn't happen and doesn't happen. And you're still on this regimen, I take it, of not really using a lot of soap products.
Right. I don't.
How do you feel? I'm sorry. Finish your thought.
I feel fine. You get used to it. It's the sort of thing. When people are first confronted with the idea, it sounds terrible. And we all, you know, when I was very used to showering daily, the idea of going 2 or 3 days without one, you know, I know you feel gross, you feel smelly, you feel oily, you really want to shower. But it is sort of like training for a marathon. If you go out and try to run 26 miles and you haven't run at all, you're going to deem that to be impossible, you know. But if you slowly go further and further, eventually you just get used to it.
Because if I don't take a shower by 2 o'clock, sometimes on the weekends, I won't get up and take a shower right away. But by 2 o'clock, I have to be in the shower because I just, it's disgusting. Anyway, that we don't need to get into that. You go into the fact that we were kind of sold a bill of goods on this, that soap products, if I'm not mistaken, Procter & Gamble, one of the early producers of soap products, were trying to find a way to maximize the use of animal fats from animal processing plants. And they came up with soaps, and then they perfumed them, and then they advertised them to us as necessary. And as you said, if you're not clean, there's something wrong with you morally. That idea kind of set in, I suppose. But today, most of us do shower every day. We use these perfumed soap products, and we feel better having done it, and we smell better having done it. So what's wrong with that?
You know, nothing. I'm not... honestly, for people who take joy in it, who really appreciate the scents and appreciate the packaging of the products and the time, the solitude of standing in a warm shower and don't have any skin issues that suggest they'd benefit from doing less. You know, I say more power to you. I think all that I set out to understand is why we do that, and hopefully to open the door for people who really just could do less and don't enjoy it and, you know, would just as soon save the time and money.
We've been taught that clean skin, good smelling skin, is healthier skin. And yet, there are people who have serious skin conditions, acne, psoriasis, eczema, other skin conditions, and they are prescribed products for those conditions. And sometimes they're told, particularly acne sufferers, you're not cleaning your skin enough. Clean your skin, use this special soap to do it. And you're discovering that may not be the way to go on all of this, that we have more incidents of these because we are so clean.
Yeah. You know, that is something that certainly I was told as a teenager. And if you look at the two aisles of soap products that are in every single pharmacy, you know, if it really were an issue of just you need to clean more aggressively, do more, you know, there are so many people out there who would gladly do that and are. And many are probably making their conditions worse. And what we weren't seeing when we were thinking about that model of that sort of disease model is that the most microbes on our skin are helping to keep our skin healthy, to helping to maintain the equilibrium of the skin and the immune cells that function within the skin and cause a flare up during bouts of these conditions, and that we need to think more about how to optimize that biome, keep it healthy, keep it diverse in order to keep people from experiencing bad flares of those conditions.
So when we get into a shower and use soap, we are washing away the microbiome or the whole colony of microbes that inhabit our skin. What's the upshot of that? I mean, if we, don't they quickly repopulate?
Yeah, you also are removing the oils on which they feed. It's sort of, you're just changing the soil. Mm-hmm. I think this is well understood through the ecology of the armpit. You know, if when people get off of deodorant, and it's not just me, many people stop using deodorant. When you apply deodorant to your underarm, you're basically just killing the microbes there, just wiping them out. But you know that if you don't apply it again the next morning, you're going to smell bad. You're going to smell offensive to other people.
Okay.
It's a sort of addictive pattern. We did not evolve to smell atrocious to other people if we didn't apply antimicrobials to our underarms every single morning. So that's just this sort of slash and burn approach. You wipe it all out and then it'll grow back. And when the ecosystem does grow back, it's pretty undesirable. It smells bad. You want to get rid of it again. And you get in this cycle of destruction and you have to keep it at bay. And the alternative is to develop a balanced ecosystem that, you know, doesn't get overrun by those microbes that smell like garbage.
There's something else at work here too. Most of us stay indoors most of the time in climate controlled conditions. And now that we're in this pandemic, we're not even going to the office. We're not talking to other people. We're spending a lot of time now because it's getting colder indoors. And you say that on indolent winter days, these are your words, when you barely moved, you felt squalid and smelled accordingly, which leads to a whole treatise on how people who work outdoors around animals and dirt, they have a different ecology about them. And the smells that come from that are actually, well, the microbes that come from that are actually good for us.
Yeah. I think most of us are so used to these topical regimens, to cleaning ourselves, that we've lost touch with the signals that are body is giving us through our skin. You know, we know maybe we get bags under our eyes when we're really sleepy, or when we're stressed out, we might be more likely to smell bad or break out. People have outbreaks, you know, of acne that are clearly related to stress or to, right, to not eating well, to not sleeping well. But we only notice those, you know, in kind of extreme cases. So once you do ease up on all of the topical solutions, you see clear fluctuations in accordance with your own stress levels, with your own lifestyle, with how you are at any given time. Right. And sometimes you just need to cover that up, you know, because you gotta keep going. Yeah. But in an ideal world, we would be able to say, you know, take that cue and address it for what it is. Say, I need to, you know, do something to address this stress because my body is telling me, you know, it's not just my skin that's experiencing that. That same stress response is going to be going on throughout the body. And it's unfortunate that our response is to, I need to go buy a Zit stick or get some emergency deodorant and cover up any signs of this, of the stress.
Is it your premise that we do this unconsciously because we've grown up doing it and our parents did it and maybe our grandparents did it because we've all been marketed to? We've all been sold, not a bill of goods, but we've all been encouraged by soap manufacturers that this is what you should do. And everything we do for you, every product we put on the shelf, is going to make you better. Is that why we do it?
Yes. There's this, there are the twin forces of marketing and cultural norms, and they've gone together hand in hand. And a lot of the marketing plays on ideas of purity and virtue and health in sort of vague ways. You know, that the soap bar doesn't say will extend your life or will prevent cancer or heart disease or will reduce stress. It doesn't actually make health, you know, claims. It can't, it's not a medicine, but it's sold in the pharmacy next to the medications, and it has the whole marketing theme behind it is one of simple virtue and goodness. And at the same time, culturally, you know, we've bought into that, and we tend to be one of the last remaining, you know, widely held points on which we tend to be really overtly discriminatory against people is on ideas of hygiene. We are quick to say that people are gross or disgusting, or that we ourselves are gross or disgusting, even when, you know, for all the other ways in which we're judgmental, people tend not to say that about many other things that, you know, we don't say that anymore about people who are not aesthetically pleasing to us, or someone who, you know, has a disability, or these are things that in the past people might've been overtly judgmental about, but now, you know, the lingering thing is hygiene.
We're going to talk some more about marketing and how it's impacting another part of our world today when we come back with Dr. James Hamblin, the author of Clean, The New Science of Skin, on Charlotte Talks. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Fifth Third Bank, dedicated to the financial empowerment of the community by investing time, resources, and people in the Charlotte area and throughout the state. More at 53.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Dr. James Hamblin is our guest today. He's a preventive medicine physician, but 5 years ago, he reduced his use of soap products, including showering with soap and using deodorant and other things, because I guess as an experiment, but because a lot of these things aren't proven, and we get into this habit of doing things because we've been marketed to and we're told that's what we should do, and so we do it. He's written about this in his book, Clean, The New Science of Skin, and also in an article he wrote for The Atlantic called I Quit Showering and Life Continued. Marketing is behind a lot of this because we're told how much better we're going to be and how much better our lives are going to be, and we'll smell better and people will like us more and we'll have a better social life if we use these soap products and conditioners and oils that replenish the oils that the soap products are removing from our skin. Marketing is a force to be reckoned with, and it's actually playing a role right now in this pandemic, which you spent most of the last year, Doctor, talking about in these forums that we're in right now on radio and television, a lot of people don't believe that this pandemic is real or that the virus is real. They don't wear the masks because they don't think they need to. They don't think that they prevent the virus, and the virus is a hoax anyway. That's the result of marketing, isn't it?
Essentially, yes. You know, I think we all have points or parts of our lives where we have developed beliefs and positions, and we are going to act in a way and choose to interpret the facts in a way that justifies those beliefs, you know, kind of no matter what. And they're obviously very different ideas, but I think showering, bathing, body wash, shampoo, these are sorts of things that a lot of people have simply decided are necessary and good, and people who don't use them are disgusting and bad, but couldn't really articulate why there is such a strong feeling there and why there is that certainty, as opposed to, with something like the virus. I think people have at this point, you know, they've heard a few catchy slogans from either public health experts or possibly Donald Trump, and they kind of stick in your head, and then you develop a position, and then all the nuance gets washed away.
Yeah. Nuance and washing away is something we don't want to talk about with regard to you, because you don't advocate. So you went to a skincare company where they give facials, and you let them give you a treatment. They asked you what you did for your skincare, and you said nothing. And they blanched. And I had a similar experience, which we talked about off the air before we started here. And then the esthetist started using all these products on you, explaining how they work and what they do for you and what you should do for yourself at home using similar products. Are you saying that all that's nonsense?
No, not at all. But it is mostly lost on me. So I think of it sort of like gourmet food. You know, there are some people who could spend hundreds of dollars on a meal and spend all afternoon cooking and going from place to place, sourcing ingredients, and it's completely, absolutely worth it to them. It really is. Mm-hmm. And the next person would be, you know, just as happy with a burger from McDonald's. And they would consider it an extreme waste of time and money to care so much about food. And I think it would be, it's useful to think about it in that way. If these rituals, you know, something like getting a facial or having an elaborate skincare routine or taking long showers and you using all kinds of products, that really brings you joy. It's something you really, you know, mm-hmm. call it a hobby, something that, you know, then great. But if you'd be just as happy doing a lot less, you know, I think people should be liberated to realize that they can try, that there's nothing inherently necessary, that you're not less of a person because you don't enjoy facials or can't afford them or just don't want to get them. Your skin is still healthy.
Yeah, because you say when you emerged from that treatment onto the streets of New York, that you experienced the world differently. You said, I can feel the world with my face in a way I didn't know was possible. My skin, I touched it. It's definitely softer. So now I'm confused. You experienced the world differently, but not necessarily better for you.
Yeah, you know, I liked getting the facial. It was pleasant. You have someone who is attending to your face for an hour. You know, it makes you feel royal. It costs money. It takes time. That's not worth it to me. But if in a world where I, you know, had those resources and that time, would I go do it sometimes? Sure. It's just... It's again, you know, to come back to the food analogy, if you take a person who's really not a foodie and you put them into a five-star restaurant in Manhattan and they have a $500 meal, most people will be able to say, yeah, that was good, but you know, it's not.
So So is that
not
essentially
worth $500?
Essentially, is that what you're saying about soap? I mean, the soap industry, as we said, is a multi-billion dollar industry every year, because there are all these products on the shelves that people buy. And it costs a lot of money and it costs a lot of time to use these products. You write, from pharmaceuticals to soaps and other personal care products, Americans are clearly overpaying for and overusing products and services that are supposed to make us healthier. The pattern of consumption is unsustainable, and much of it may be doing more harm than good. Is that why you don't do it? Because of all of that?
Yeah. Because ultimately, you know, I've been thinking a lot about microbes. I feel like I've been able to achieve a sort of reasonable steady state where I'm okay without them. And then in the process, I save time and money and water and plastic bottles, and my carbon footprint
right.
is a little less. It's just one fewer thing to think about and worry about.
So, well, you're a doctor, so what would you tell me as a patient? I mean, you don't treat patients like me, but what would you say to them? Would this even come up in a conversation between you and a patient?
No, in the only way that I talk about microbes publicly is in terms of preventing infectious disease, and I think there's just something that the medical community should emphasize: targeted hygiene, which is to say, there are practices like brushing your teeth, which will mm-hmm. prevent cavities, like washing your hands, which prevent disease transmission, like wearing a mask, which prevents microbes from getting on someone else's face. And those things are extremely important. And that's just going to be fundamentally different from something like using deodorant or washing your hair, which is a personal preference. And to a lot of people, that doesn't feel like a personal preference. It feels like a social mandate that you yeah. couldn't really break from. But I think we could slowly turn the ship away from the norms that have been established by marketing and let people have more leeway to do what they feel is right, what they enjoy in those areas, because there isn't a medically right or wrong answer.
So you do rinse off. I mean, you get in the shower sometimes and just let the water run, but you don't use soap products, you don't use shampoo, but you do admit to rinsing. And you spoke with a Canadian, excuse me, microbiologist and professor of dermatology who advises people to just wash their bits, their underarms, their groin, and their feet. Mm-hmm. And she warns that overwashing harms the skin. So help us understand what we'd be like if we followed her prescription or your prescription. What would we all be like?
A lot of people do that. And I think, you know, just because I took an extreme approach, partly for purposes of investigation, uh-huh. you know, doesn't mean that there isn't this really interesting middle ground, which if everyone did it, you know, that would save all kinds of resources. But it's a shorter shower. It's not too hot. You're washing just underarms, just groin, the areas that have a lot of sebum and a lot of microbes and are most likely to develop odor. And then, you know, you're in and out real quickly, and your bottle of soap, you know, goes three times as far as it used to. And that's that much less that everyone is consuming. And, you know, when you add up the time in your life and the amount of resources we're consuming as a population doing these sorts of things, those small things add up.
Well, I think you say we spend 2 hours, no, excuse me, 2 years of our life in the shower. Is that right?
In the process of from sort of going into the bathroom and coming out, and if you spend 20 minutes doing that,
right.
then and if you stop that entirely, then yeah, 2 years of waking life. Wow. So that's obviously a rough ballpark. I mean, some people spend more, some less.
So you have a really short summation of this whole thesis in your article in The Atlantic called "I Quit Showering and Life Continued." And I read that online, where you can also see videos of you that you've produced for The Atlantic on various different products, topics rather. You are incredibly funny. I mean, to tell you that it hasn't been demonstrated in this conversation because we're not about that.
Sorry.
But you are, no, it's fine. But you are incredibly, I mean, laugh off the chair funny with your timing and your takes and your, just the things that you say to your subjects that you're talking to. And I kept thinking as I watched that you present yourself, excuse me now, like a dweeb. And you kind of look like Doogie Howser, and I'm thinking to myself, how can this work? And then I ran across a video where someone from The Atlantic addresses this very topic with you directly by reading to you viewer emails.
How old is Hamblin? Is he even old enough to drink? Was that kid a doctor or a member of One Direction? You remind me of Doogie Howser, the 12-year-old doctor. Why would anyone believe anything this bratty child has to say? I don't take advice from someone who hasn't reached their sexual maturity.
Interesting.
Obviously, you set that up and it doesn't bother you, but you do look very young. Is that, has that been a cross to bear for somebody who's a medical doctor?
You know, I understand when people see a doctor come into the their room, they would like to see someone who's probably got some gray in their hair, you know.
Yeah.
So it takes extra effort to establish that you know what you're talking about.
And maybe you are just a little off, because you are a guy who walked away from a $500,000-a-year career as a doctor to become a journalist, and we all know we don't make any money. how's that worked out for you? Pretty well. You're in The Atlantic. You've written the book. It's working for you. You're a rock star.
I'm fortunate to have work and to be published right now. It's a tough time for journalism everywhere. But I felt like we need more messaging on prevention and public health, you know, that our whole system is designed to reward financially from doctors to pharmaceutical companies, the treatment of disease once people already have it. And there's very little that goes into just helping keep people healthy and focus on what really, you know, what's important and what's not. And part of that is breaking down, you know, these sort of hygiene myths, you know, what is actually preventing disease?
Right.
What is just a personal preference?
Well, I would suggest people search out your YouTube videos, Dr. James Hamblin, and also get your book, because it's an interesting read. Clean, The New Science of Skin. Thank you for spending the time with us today. I appreciate it a lot.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.